Good afternoon. I am Dawn Ireland, President of CDH International, and welcome to this week's episode of the CDH Radio Show. Our podcast raises awareness of congenital diaphragmatic hernia. We learn about the latest research, but mostly we share the stories of the patients that are affected by CDH and their amazing families. This week, we are joined by Chris Cavalier, an adult survivor of CDH, who has written a book about his journey, and his mom, Suzanne. Interviewing them this week is Tracy Meets, my right hand and the leader of the support department of CDH International, also known as CHERUBS.
Hi, I am here with Suzanne and Chris. They are a mother and son. And they are here today to share their journey with CDH today. Suzanne, would you like to introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about what life was like before CDH and start telling us your story?
Absolutely. Thank you, Tracy. We're honored to share our story with you. My name is Suzanne Cavalier. This is my son, Chris Cavalier.
Hello.
This weekend we're celebrating his 35th birthday, which is always an exciting time in our entire family. We usually celebrate here at the Jersey Shore where we are living, and it's always just a special time and has been since he was born. My husband and I met in high school as teenagers, and as any young couple, you know, we're excited to have children, and I got pregnant pretty quickly at 22. And Christopher was born in Trenton, New Jersey by emergency C-section because of fetal distress. Had a perfectly normal pregnancy, all the expectations of a healthy child. Honestly, at that age, didn't even know that was an option, that there could be anything wrong, until I was in labor, and within minutes they detected fetal distress and performed the emergency C-section. And once he was born, they honestly didn't know what was wrong with him until they did an x-ray. And then they saw the hernia. And, you know, I remember thinking, hernia, okay, fix it. That's just a hernia. So, you know, and life steamrolled from there. So within hours, they had a surgeon come in who knew of a diaphragmatic hernia, and he did the repair on Christopher and put a patch in and came in and explained to us that the surgery is probably not going to be enough, that he would need ECMO. And of course, no one even at our hospital had ever heard of ECMO. We certainly didn't. And they said the only hospital who accepted him by the numbers and, I guess, criteria of how, you know, his lung capacities or whatever they did back then, was in Boston Children's Hospital. So within 24 hours, a team of surgeons flew down in a jet airplane to the local airport to pick him up. And my husband and I, of course, and the entire family's overwhelmed and devastated, and but yet full of hope, knowing that, okay, he's still alive. There must be a reason that every step of the way, no one was giving up on him, and we certainly weren't going to give up on him. And it was just go, 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 take him wherever you need to go. But I had never been to Boston myself or Massachusetts, so I think it's like 600 miles away. He left, and you know, not knowing if we'd ever see him again. And 5 days later, when I was allowed to leave the hospital, my husband and I drove up there and met the surgical team, and were overwhelmed, of course, with the ECMO machine and the hospital, but then so comforted by the professionalism and the doctors who, you know, at that time, even 35 years ago, were already dedicated. And Christopher was, you know, 7 days later, one of their very first survivors to come off ECMO.
Yep.
And the nurses named him the Smooth Sailor and threw a party, which I wasn't even there for. We didn't have the internet, we didn't have cell phones. Yep. So
right.
I got photographs in the mail of the event, which I still have a cool book I went through today to recap, and not that you ever forget all these details. But yeah, the nurses were like his other moms, I would call them, and the way they cared for him. And we had no one or nothing to tell us what our future or his future would be like, the life expectancy.
Right.
From day one, everyone was, he's probably not going to make it. you know, they gave him a 2% chance. And then the surgeon gave a 2% chance.
You know, I even remember one part in the book where you even, where my mom even says, even if Christopher could survive this, should he? Because you didn't even know what the long-term effects would be, probably both physically and psychologically, for everything that I went through.
So there was nobody else ahead of him, at least through that hospital. So he was their first ECMO survivor CDH baby. And they celebrated him, and he ended up staying in the ICU for about 10 weeks, came home on oxygen and G-tube feedings. I guess he got, that's pretty common today too, the feeding issues and breathing issues. So he came home with that back to New Jersey, but didn't stay home very long. Immediately went into congestive heart failure. And we tried going local to Philadelphia to Children's Hospitals. There's two hospitals there we went to, but we never found the same care or the understanding as Children's in Boston. So it became a ongoing thing for us too. We're just going back to Boston because they knew him. They cared about him. They loved him, I think, some of the doctors. And they just embraced us when we came through the emergency room. So that's where we had to go, where we felt most comfortable taking back to. Because frankly, back then, no one heard of CDH.
No.
No one heard of ECMO. No one knew of any survivor out there, even in Philadelphia. So we would have to go there. It was the only place that we ever felt comfortable taking him. And we did many, many, many times. It was an ongoing thing.
Yeah.
You know, back on the road again, here we go. My husband and I, he was our firstborn, so it was okay. You know, we were young, and I like to say a little naive. So it kind of made it easier on us. We didn't know what else to expect. So that was our life. And, you know, taking care of Chris and going back and forth to Boston under the care of Dr. Craig Lillehei and Jay Wilson, and they were phenomenal. So we put him in their hands and in God's hands. And that's who we had to believe in and trust in, and how it did for many, 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 many years.
Absolutely.
So then Christopher, the heart failure issues and aspiration pneumonia, issues with a hole in his heart, fluid on his brain, mostly the breathing was the biggest
breathing
problem.
Was the biggest thing. With the iron lung, the oxygen tanks that
That came later.
Yeah.
But in the beginning, you know, as a little baby up to, you know, 7 months old, he was doing really well and then started failing. So one day, one of the pulmonologists came to us and suggested an iron lung. Now, I know today, I don't think people are talking about that, but they pulled one out of the basement. And to me, by God's grace, he thought of this. And so Christopher was sedated every night and put into this negative pressure ventilator to help relieve all the pressure from the pulmonary arteries, I guess, on his lungs. And it started to work. So from 7 months, I'm shortening the story, I have all the details in writing, but from 7 months to 15 months, every night he was put into this tank, this big metal tank. And with his feeding tube and everything and reflux and all the other issues, but it worked. So they made one for us to come home to, or to bring home. So we brought one home to New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, I think even there was a fund started in the newspaper.
That's right. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
You know, so, you know, I know you asked about, or people ask about effects on your family. Well, obviously it's affecting jobs, finances, marriage, extended family. Our parents all still work, and we're constantly going back and forth 5-6 hours to Boston every weekend, and then all the time to the emergency room and whatnot.
Yeah.
So, but we had great parents, you know, his grandparents, his grandmothers are still alive, very involved, always have been, and we really couldn't have done it without them.
Yes. Yes. Family support going through a NICU journey and afterwards is extremely important. And you guys are so fortunate to have had that. And that's
very
important.
Yes, we were. Definitely.
And you know, I like to tell parents too that I was reluctant to ask for help. You kind of don't know what to ask for. And I was reluctant to accept the help when it was offered.
Right.
But you got to learn to do that. Because what I've learned through life is there will be time to do back.
Right.
And you really need to accept all the help you can get.
I 100% agree with you.
Uh-huh. And then through the years, The other issues he had was getting back to eating, which I still see today. We didn't have a, well, I began a ECMO parent support group because there was not a, you know, CDH was still so rare, survivors. Right. So I ran an ECMO parent support group through Children's Hospital in Boston with the help of one of the nurses up there. And we would go up and hold monthly meetings. They had ECMO reunions every year. So we did that for about 15 years, taking him up to the reunions, and he was always the star patient of the day there, and it was awesome. You know, it becomes your extended family.
Yeah.
The hard part for us was it was just so far away.
Yeah.
You know, I think the only thing I thought about today, the only thing I would ever change was, like, if I could have, I'd have moved to Boston to have everybody right there, because coming back home was always the hardest part.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah.
I bet.
Being so far away from the best care we could get.
I bet.
So then I ran the support group and connected with a lot of parents. But again, we didn't have the internet or anything, and we didn't have any children older than ours to know what to expect. So I guess there's good and bad in that. So we just lived and treated him as normal and typical as we could.
Yes.
You know, oxygen, everything. It was always the beach. Was taking him on rides and
right.
living normal. And then next came, well,
trying our best to live as normal as possible
yep.
is the key thing.
And then having siblings, you know, so I had a miscarriage after Chris, and then, okay, we'll try this again. And then I had a healthy baby girl. And then 2 years later, we have had another little boy. So I have three children. My husband and I have been married for 38 years. So, you know, we've had our ups and downs and issues, and, you know, the, CDH, I love this shirt. Like, this is so perfect. The warrior shirt.
It is.
Because it is a life. I didn't know it would be life affecting.
Yeah.
But Chris will share more of what he's gone through. And I guess what we've learned is just to how to find joy, happiness, and fun. We're all about fun here. How to have fun in spite of whatever's going on.
In spite of the worst circumstances.
Or wherever you are, whatever hospital you're at, like, we're going to make it a good time. Whether you're in there on Christmas, Easter,
yep.
right? Or whatever.
Absolutely.
We're going to bring the other kids along.
Uh-oh.
And we're going to have a good time. So Christopher has overcome so much in his life, which is why I get excited to share his story even till this day, because I can talk to someone, you know, out on the street who's a nurse, and they're in awe of what he's been through. And I'm going to let him share more of his journey as he got
okay.
older. I mean, he was on oxygen for 3 years, tube feedings, you know, and then it developed, the scoliosis developed, and he started wearing a brace when he was 5. So we didn't know where that would lead. But, and I can just remember asking the doctors all the questions of, will he go to school? Will he drive a car? Will he? And they're like, hold on, hold on. Let's get him through the first year. You know, we're not sure about that. But I always wanted that projection of a future, which
right.
now we can
yeah.
offer that to other people because he's had quite a future. He's done amazing things. And I'm just so excited for him to be able to share it with the world, because
yeah.
that's his dream.
Right. We appreciate that, Chris. Chris, do you want to share a little bit about what living with CDH has been like for you?
Well, I don't remember much of it as a baby. As my mom said, she covered the bulk of that. What I do remember is just a lot of trips to the hospital, a lot of time being spent in the emergency room or being treated. And that was really my world. It was almost cut off from anything that anyone would consider to be normal.
Right.
But it was the world that I lived in. I didn't see it as being different from anybody else, to be honest with you, because that's all I knew at the time. You know, it wasn't until I got to school that I realized just how different my existence was from everybody else. I also had my breathing issues. That was a lasting problem I had from CDH. That was always a problem. Going to public schools, you know, you see how other people live and what the world is like. And it was difficult for me going to school when I was younger. Because you just find out that, you know, it's made known to you, we'll just say, that you're different from
right.
others, especially at that age. I dealt with bullying at times. I also had to deal with the brace, as my mom said, at age 5. I had the brace that I had to wear. I also had to deal with various medications that I was being given as well, that they were trying on me.
Right.
So because of all, I was
You were smaller, yeah. I'd say. Smaller and frailer than the average boy in second, third,
right,
and fourth
right.
grade.
So I had all these things, and I had all this anxiety and fear about everything. Between, you know, the medical stuff, dealing with people, just trying to fit in. To the point that they eventually had me deal with, it was a counselor, I believe it was, right?
Mm-hmm.
So for years of my life, I went under various psychological evaluations.
Therapy. Counseling, social skills,
exactly.
Counseling.
They wanted to see how medications were affecting me. They wanted to see
ADHD.
They wanted to see how I was interacting with others. But the biggest reason was to help me deal with this anxiety and fear that I had at a very young age. See, I was someone that was afraid of both life and death. I mean, being confronted with things I had to deal with, I was very aware of my own mortality, really.
Mm-hmm.
So I was aware that my life could end at any time. And that's a fear that I had to get over. Flip side to that coin is I was also terrified of life. Given the cards that have been dealt to me, I didn't know what was going to come next. On top of it, because of certain poor treatment I had received on certain occasions, specifically with certain students I had dealt with in the public school system, you know, I was terrified. I was terrified of everything. So my counselor is trying to treat me for that. And I also had a terrible fear of being alone. This fear of abandonment, because most of my life, as she said, it was just us in a hospital room or a hospital, whatever it may be. Like, there was no outside world, really, for years of my life.
Birthday parties.
No, there was nothing. So it wasn't until I went out to school that I got to see how everything else really was. And I found that it was through my faith in God that helped get me through all those things. And it was by believing in Him and knowing that He was always with me that I was able to overcome all these fears.
Right.
Though after the third grade, I was moved to a special education school for kids with special learning needs. I was moved there because of the medication and the scoliosis. And on top of the fact that I was having too much difficulty trying to, I guess, interact.
I think it was basically on emotional health.
Emotional health as well.
You learned well in the regular school, but feeling that complete insecurity.
And that I was out of place, I didn't belong.
Right.
And a whole bunch of factors. So I got moved to this school, which had kids, not just with special learning disabilities, but kids from all different backgrounds, from different cultures. And I remember I was initially terrified of it. Because, like, you're going from my small town area to now I'm going into Trenton.
To the city.
Into the city. Not knowing anybody. And I was told that I was scared to death. But after meeting some people and making friends there, I felt like I was right at home. And it was during my time there that I learned about other, and I developed my interest in other people and other cultures. Because we had people there from, I mean, different parts of the world. So I got to get a taste of everything that was out there. And because we all were considered different, if you will, we all got along and had
acceptance.
Our own acceptance. Exactly.
That's neat.
So it was a very special place for me. And I stayed there up until I graduated. But at the age of 16, it was determined that I had to get my spinal fusion surgery done. So they had to put in 2 titanium bars in my spine. Because of my congenital diaphragmatic hernia, there was increased complications and potential risks involved with surgery as compared to somebody else who might, you know, not have those issues. So there's a greater chance that something could go wrong. So they had to do things a bit differently with how they conducted the surgery. And I was told, I'll never forget this, that if I do survive the surgery, it's going to feel like I was hit by a truck.
Wow.
They said it was going to be an extremely painful recovery process, if I even did make it through the whole thing.
So where did we go for surgery?
We went to Boston.
Of course.
Yeah. So we went up to Boston Children's Hospital because we already had that relationship with them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they had the surgery done. You know, I remember after the surgery was over and I first came to, and I was like just, you know, coming out of my daze, that sleep. And I just looked up and I said, thank you, God, because I really didn't think I was going to make it. And in my mind, I will tell you, when I went to that surgery, I had the mindset that this is the end right here. Like, I didn't even think of the context of, like, I'm going to get through this. I was like, this is the end game. So when I survived it, I was even shocked myself. But then, of course, there was the brutal realization of the intense pain that I was in.
I couldn't imagine.
It was brutal. Everything hurt. Because with your back, that controls pretty much everything in your body. Like, I was confined to a bed. I hadn't eaten or drank anything. I don't know how long it was that they just fed me ice chips, basically.
I remember, like forever.
Yeah, yeah.
But you were cut, I think, because of the severity of it. It was like a 70-degree curve. So he was, you know, cut for 10 vertebrae on the back, but then also did the anterior spinal fusion.
Right.
So that was the scary part when they say, oh, we need to collapse your lungs and remove and move everything. And
yeah,
just all of us were like, oh my gosh, you know, how's he going to get through this?
Exactly.
And it was not an easy surgery. And it was about 12 hours and they almost lost him during that.
Yep.
And then the recovery was horrendous for him.
Oh,
and then I eventually made it back to school. And then the next life-altering problem came into my world. It had turned out that I also had hepatitis C. And that came from the blood transfusions that I had when I was much younger as a baby.
From ECMO.
From ECMO.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Because he was born prior to the testing on the blood.
Right.
So I also had to have treatment at the age of 17, which consisted of a self-injection in my thigh every Thursday, I believe it was.
I think we picked Thursday.
Yeah, Thursday. And that went on for about a year. So I had to be treated for that as well. Despite all these things, I was successfully able to graduate. I even got voted to be president of my school, which was pretty cool.
Yep.
Yeah. From there, I went on. I went into college. I went to Mercer County Community College. I also started speaking at that time, since the bulk of my problems were over. Well, nothing's ever over, but like those are the major life-altering things. And I started speaking at churches. I spoke at schools. And, I learned that a lot of people were inspired by what I had to say and everything that I had been through. So that played a role in me going to get my degree in communications. I first got my associate's degree in communications at Mercer County. I then went to Monmouth University and got my bachelor's degree there.
That's amazing.
Thank you. Thank you. I was also actually news director there as well for a period of time. So I had a lot of fun. Broadcasting is what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. That was the whole thing. That was the original game plan. So I had a lot of fun with that. So I graduated, got into the real world. Turns out, well, that didn't really work out as originally intended. I eventually found my way into working in security services for a period of time. So I had a buddy of mine who was in the Army. He helped get me on in. I had an interest in that type of work. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did for a period of time. Eventually, I worked for a private company, and then I had befriended a gentleman mm-hmm. who was a ex-Marine, and he helped me get in working at the current hospital I work at right now. I did security there for a period of time for a few years, and right now I currently work in behavior health as a mental health associate.
Okay.
Yep.
So did you go back to more schooling to add to that, or?
No, I have to tell you, they said I didn't actually need it. And I was asking them about that. They said, as long as I had my bachelor's degree and the relevant experience, mm-hmm. which I had gained from my years working at the hospital, they were happy to take me. So.
Well, you definitely have the life experiences and the background mm-hmm. to help to talk to others. Do you talk to others and counsel others?
Absolutely. I talk to my patients all the time. So, and they've thanked me for talking to them, sharing my story. And I'm able to build that connection that others may have difficulty with. And the reason I made that transition is because after we got done dealing with the whole debacle with the coronavirus and the global pandemic and everything, I even said to my lieutenant, I said to him, I was like, you realize once we get this all under control, the next crisis we're gonna have to deal with is the wave of depressions and potential suicides of people that have lost their jobs, their money, relationships, and God only knows what else. So once I felt we had a good grasp on things, then I made my move into the behavioral health part of the hospital, and that's currently what I do now.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful that you're giving back and helping others.
Thank you. Thank you. And you know, I was looking back on my life and I was thinking to myself, God has blessed me with a pretty cool life. I mean, I've done things that most people will never experience. I mean, I've gotten to know and make friends with people in different parts of the world. I've gotten to learn about their culture, their language, and their countries. What else do I have? I've been had the opportunity to use my story to help people. And of course, I now have had the opportunity for my mom to get our book published that we can share with.
You can hold it.
There you go.
You want us to tell us a little bit about the book, Suzanne, and why you wrote the book with your son?
Sure. So I actually started writing Chris's story about 10 years ago to get it out of my head. Because it, as you know, as a parent, you know, we constantly relive, rethink. You have a smell, you walk in a hospital, everything comes back. So I started putting it on paper as therapy for myself. And then I kind of did it for Chris. I realized, let me put it all on paper because he won't know, you know, as he grows up. And then, so I got it all out on paper and I kind of put it away for a long time.
Right,
Because life goes on as a good thing. You know, we have other children, we have parents who are sick or just anything else in life. So I put it aside and it helped put it out of my head. And I didn't know the relevance today.
Yeah. Like we didn't even intentionally, we didn't know this would even become a book.
Ever.
I mean, like she wrote her half just as her own private journal. Mm-hmm. I started my portion when I was around 19 and 20 when I was speaking. We didn't know it was going to become a book. I mean, at that time, I think we had when I was 20, when I was speaking and everything, we had that idea, but it just seemed to be so complex, the process of getting published and everything, that we ended up putting it on the back burner because I was still going to college and I had so many other things that I had going on in my world.
To be honest with you, I didn't know there'd be any relevance today.
That too.
Because we were told ECMO could be obsolete. You're never going to hear of any of these things again. Just go on and live your life. And he'd really been great. We haven't been to a hospital since 16, 17, and he's 35 years old. So why would anyone want to know our story? But my youngest son, Nick, was in a medical college and started asking questions. And I said, oh, come here. And I opened a closet and had the entire writing of his story and everything I've saved and collected, as I'm sure lots of parents do, because you just never know. Mm-hmm. So I had everything from hospital bands and photos and books and newsletters and everything. And it was him who said, this has to be published. I said, well, the story never has an end. And he's like, that's a good thing.
There is no end.
So we sat down and collaborated as a family and put together, you know, we have a website, we did the book, we decided to self-publish, even coming up with the name, Alive by Grace, a mother's story with a message of hope from Christopher, because the first half of the book is me laying out the details, the ugly, the good, the bad, the tears, everything that we went through, he went through, most of the first 3 years up to about five or six, and then he takes over and goes into great detail of his ups and downs, the fears, how he overcame them, what the surgery was like in detail, what bullying was like. That was huge for a long time, having a learning disability, having those anxieties and how you overcome them.
Yeah.
And then just his thoughts on life that, you know, putting them down on paper was tremendous for us. Great. So it's kind of been hanging out for 3 years. We said we're doing it as a thank you project. We do have photos in the book. Oh, there's the iron lung, actually. We do have photos of family, physicians, the scoliosis, articles in the newspaper. There's Robert Bartlett, the man who invented the ECMO machine that I had the privilege of meeting. And we did it as a tribute. My part was for him, for his future, my other children. And then we realized it could help other people. So, and professionals to understand what families go through. You know, today I can become very overwhelmed on Facebook when I see these babies. I mean, look, it gets me now, I have goosebumps, because to think that what these parents, you know, are facing and how hard it is, and just to manage your whole life, how to manage normalcy, you know, when you, you know, how to not foster self-pity and selflessness for the child, how to teach your other children. Like, there's just so much to our stories that's why we decided to put it down on paper. So it's available on Amazon. We've never really thought of sharing it with the world, but I mean, I think this shirt says it all. He's a survivor.
Yes, you know, he is.
He's been pushed to the limits over and over and over again. And all of his words are in here.
Yep.
And I think he did a very fantastic job. And
I thought you did pretty good yourself.
Oh,
so.
Thank you.
Well, that is neat. That
it's
is
awesome to
neat.
Be able to do it together. You know, how many to often do with your adult son? You know, he lives an hour away, but we get together as often as we can. And so it was a fun journey for us. It was heart-wrenching at times.
Yes.
I mean, we couldn't even read each other's writings for a long time.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I'm anxious to get a hold of the book and read your story further and learn, too. I've heard you talk about your book on several occasions, and I think I need to buy it off of Amazon and check it out.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Chris, so you haven't had any other health problems since the scoliosis surgery?
I have not.
Nothing major
like that anyway, so.
Stomach issues, breathing issues.
Breathing issues, yeah.
But manageable.
Nothing manageable. Exactly.
No hospitalizations. Years of asthma inhalers, nebulizers. I mean, we kind of downplay it, or he does especially. He never complained.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So how do you?
He's had some things.
How did your surgeons and your specialists from when you were there at Boston Children's, did they refer you to specialists to follow you after you turned 18?
No, I don't know. There was never a CDH clinic or anything to go to. So
No.
Us finding cherubs online, and then the CDHI has been helpful. And it's nice to know that these parents have a place to go for information, to know.
Yeah.
I mean, at times I think it could be scary too, to kind of see what could be out in front of you, but every single child's different.
Right.
And every outcome, I'm sure, is different, and every family's different. And, you know, I mean, we know what got us through, and that's family, love, and God.
Absolutely.
And just surrendering it. And, you know, the more I did that, and then he learned to do that as well, is, you know, there were times he would say, Mom, I think it'd be easier to just die and be an angel in heaven with God. And I'm like, no, honey, you're staying here for a while because you're my angel. You know, he's taught us so much. And we've met so many amazing, wonderful people on this journey. And he intends to do more great things.
Yep.
I'm sure you will.
He's on an airplane last year. He's a learner. He's a learner.
Yeah.
He's learning languages. He's learning Russian and German. And so,
that is neat. Well. Sorry, did you get your license to fly?
We have certain complications involved in that, especially in the state that we're in.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a couple hours of flying. I flew a Katana light sports aircraft, and I flew a Cessna.
Well, that's neat.
Oh, it was fun.
Oh, I bet it was.
For all the challenges.
I bet it was. Do you guys have any lasting words that you want to leave with CDH families that are watching today?
Go for it.
Okay. I would say to them, stay strong. Don't give up hope. And to those like myself who have survived, I would say to you the same thing I've said to my patients who are is that find a reason to keep going. Find something that you want to accomplish and go for it. And it might not always work out the way that you intended, but at least you did something.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I would tell them.
That's wonderful. Suzanne, do you have any lasting words that you would tell parents that are just starting out on this journey?
First, I'd always like to say congratulations. When you birth any child, they're a gift.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a word we didn't hear too much. So I would say congratulations and hang in there for the ride. You know, there's ups and downs, but with that comes the greatest joys you can ever have in your life.
I 100% agree with you, Suzanne. Suzanne and Chris, thank you for joining me today and sharing a little bit about your story with CDH and giving so much inspiration to others. And check out your book on Amazon, and I will publish that link there in the blog post so others can check that out as well. And I greatly appreciate you joining me today, and thank you.
Thank you so much, Tracy.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much for joining us again this week. Thank you to Chris and Suzanne Cavalier and to Tracy for interviewing this amazing family. If your family would like to be interviewed for a future radio show podcast, the telethon, our website to be featured, or anything at all to raise awareness, please go to www.cdhi.org/share-your-story. Once again, I'm your host, Dawn Ireland, thanking you all for joining us at CDH International on this week's radio show. Have a good week, and we'll see you again next Tuesday. Bye-bye.
This is my fight song. Take back my life song. Pirate away, no. My car was torn off. So you're now a beast. Yeah.